Okay, good morning. Well, thank you for showing up here at 8:30. Some of you probably were at the office party last night. I unfortunately wasn't. It's the last day of TechEd, and we're trying to get a little bit, well, technical regarding developing for Kinect for Windows in your own apps. Just to set expectations, this is still more like an entry-level overview talk, so if any of you is already like deep into game development or has played around with Kinect for Windows version 2 a lot, maybe the level that you would desire from a talk. So expectation settings. So what I wanted to get out of this, just to get an idea like what you can do with it and like get some starting pointers to develop apps for Kinect for Windows version 2 and really see that it's not hard to get started and just do it. A little bit about me. Kinect for Windows is not usually my day job. Typically, I deal with integration, architecture, things at scale that nobody sees. But Kinect for Windows is just like became a sort of passion of mine. So first of all, let's briefly talk. I mean, we'll get into some tech details during the talk already, but what is this Kinect for Windows, right? It's a 3D camera in a way that uses the same tech that you know from Xbox One. Has a video camera also with a good resolution and a high wide aspect ratio. Has a four element microphone array so it can actually pinpoint people's direction when they're speaking. And on top of it, like you get an SDK that makes it really easy to get started and write applications for it. So a little bit about the features of Kinect for Windows version 2 compared also to the previous version. So first about the previous version, the Kinect for Windows, which was based on the Xbox 360 Kinect. That was based on a technology which is called structured light. It used to project just a refraction pattern of laser dots basically into space and was able to derive from what it picked up again from those refraction patterns that it knew how far things are. So the company was PrimeSense and that company got acquired by Apple. So you can expect that Microsoft is probably not going to work anymore with this type of technology. So they invested in developing a new technology based on time of flight. How that works, I have a little bit about that going forward. But just to give you a context, like time of flight cameras in the industry usually cost like thousands of dollars. Like we're talking about a device here that sells for $200 or 200 euro. Compared to the old Kinect for Windows, it has a 3x desk fidelity, so it gives you 3x as precise data. The camera is, basically like a standard video camera, 1080p. It has light-independent infrared, so if anybody wants to get a flashlight out or use the camera, and when I show that later on, you can try that out on me and you will not see the light. The microphones are improved and for the skeletons or the bodies that Kinect exposes, also those have been improved both in correct joint positions and adding more joints. It supports thumb tracking and has also an improved calibrated range of about 0.5 meters in the near area up to 4.5 meters in the far area. The actual technology would work for further distance, but it was really designed to work in a living room scenario. So Kinect for Windows version 2 is shipping now. You can buy it. And what has been announced last week, and that's really new, you can now use the Xbox One Kinect sensor and like plug it into a PC if you buy an adapter. The adapter costs like 50 euro or $50, or in pounds, I'm not sure how much it would be. But that really gives people like a easy way to get started without investing a lot of money. What it will do in the background, it would actually flash a different firmware on the Kinect when you plug it in. So just be aware of that when you do that the first time. Don't unplug if it takes a few seconds for it to get started when you switch between systems. The set of APIs that you get for Kinect for Windows is pretty much feature compatible and looks and feels the same between desktop applications, store applications, and also, which we cannot access yet, Xbox applications. The promise is that we will be able to develop for Xbox, but they haven't really opened that program yet out to the general public. But basically, the message is if you start developing modern app style, like for the store, that eventually you should be able to bring that over to Xbox relatively easy. You already can publish Kinect apps into the Windows Store, and there are a few examples that you can actually try out as we speak. Furthermore, there's a Microsoft built and supported plugin for the Unity engine. The Unity engine is a pretty popular gaming engine to build interactive apps or gaming apps across multiple platforms. Of course, like this plugin will not work, let's say, on a Sony PlayStation, but you can basically, again, there try to write your app in Unity, use the plugin, use it on your PC, and then later on also use it on the Xbox. So this is just an overview about how the different data sources of Kinect for Windows look like. I will try to go through each of them, maybe in a little demo with code. But in general, those are the basic things you get when you install Kinect for Windows SDK, and you don't need to do much code to access this data. This is the high-level architecture of how you interact with the sensor. Based on the physical sensor, you have a driver. The driver actually now, I believe you don't even need to install the SDK anymore since last week if you plug it in and you get it through Windows Update. On top of that sits the Kinect runtime, which is essentially a service that's running on your box and provides a bunch of basic functionalities. It connects to the Kinect sensor, takes in the connection request from your apps, and then pre-processes the data for you. What that means is that you can now have multiple applications connected to the same Kinect sensor at the same time and running at the same time. This is a difference from the previous Kinect for Windows sensor. How does that? It shares basically memory between there's shared memory between your own application and this runtime. And so just keep in mind, and I probably will mention that a few times, that you want to keep everything that you do with it like to minimum on that shared memory. You want to grab it, copy it into your own workspace, or look at it really quickly and then don't touch it anymore. Otherwise, you might not be freeing up resources fast enough. On top of that runtime, now we have native APIs you can develop in C, C++ on top of it, and there's even a bridge for open source projects that people are using to connect to non-Microsoft runtimes and so on. More common for us is the .NET API. It's pretty rich. We will mostly use the .NET API when I show code samples, and there's a very much similar looking and feeling Windows RT API also that you can use for modern apps or Windows Store apps, how they're called. So a little bit about recommended hardware. You want to have a powerful CPU. You can already run it with a Surface Pro, regular Surface Pro first generation, so an i5 would work. But there are some scenarios which we might even see in the demo, where even, let's say, a two-year-old machine might have some challenges here and there. RAM, 4 GB recommended. GPU, and that's very important, you need DirectX 11 support. And you want to install the proper driver. I tried on, by the way, like when you install the latest Windows 10 preview, It's not supported yet, but it also kind of works. And even when you don't get the proper graphics driver, it still exposes some level of DirectX 11 to you. So if it runs really slow, you want to verify if you have the proper graphics driver installed. And why does it need the graphics driver? It actually does a lot of pre-processing in the GPU. So it takes the stream coming from the Kinect, works through the data it gets from there, and then basically renders or derives the distance or the depth information based on the infrared streams that it gets from the Kinect. You really need USB 3. We're talking, for example, for the color stream about a bandwidth of 120 megabytes per second. The chipsets that are supported are Intel and Renesas currently. So if you don't have those chipsets, you might be out of luck in running it sufficiently or successfully. I can't tell about upcoming chipsets or new versions of chipsets. I think they want to provide as much compatibility as possible, but this is what you have to work with now. Similar, if you want to use this with an OS, you need to have Windows 8 and 8.1. Again, not because they try to be evil, just because the USB stack in Windows 8 has been basically revamped and now has the performance they require. What I mentioned before, design principles in the SDK and in the stack overall, and that you also want to keep in your own apps, is you want to minimize per frame allocations, and you get low latency and you want to keep low latency. And on top of that, they provide some higher level functions which we will, or add-ons, let me call it like add-on SDKs that you can leverage to get more metadata. Usage scenarios, I will cover that only very, very briefly. It goes from retail, interactive displays. There was a nice heat map you can see even as a demo where Kinect would be used to see like where people stand in the store, how long they move around. In physical therapy, to match a posture or pose, or have a physical therapist correct you based on based on observations when you were offline. Then healthcare, like no touch scenarios, when a surgeon, for example, is scrubbed in, they cannot touch anything without breaking the sterile field. Education, again, a lot of interactive applications and training. From posture recognition to giving interactive feedback to people. So let's look briefly at the Kinect SDK, what you get when you install it. Okay, that was the wrong. Oh yeah, here we are. So when you install the Kinect SDK, you actually get a very nice browser of all the samples that you get with that SDK and tools and further information like documentation page and further downloads. One little sample I want to show, and that's available in the Windows Store, is Kinect Evolution basically gives you an overview of all the streams that Kinect exposes to you. So I don't have a demo monkey with me, so I have to do all the things by myself. I apologize if I have to jump off stage and jump back on stage a few times. So what you're currently here seeing is and that's probably the most important picture, is the depth fidelity that Kinect gives you. So you see people in the first row, you can already see their shape a little bit. If I get closer and closer, well, I see more people as it cuts out in the back of the field, like it's, as I said, like 4.5 meters up to 8 meters, and then really starts cutting off. But there's also a minimum distance. Like if I stand in front of it, it picks me up. If I go too close, it will at one point not be able to know how far things are from it. Again, what you see at the bottom is a visualization of like a body it would recognize with actually joint direction and hand state, like hand open, making a fist, or making a lasso movement, like with two fingers. Don't ask me why they called it like that. And you can also see the directional microphone that it gives, can give you the information where somebody is relative to the Kinect sensor. If I move to the left side, it will know that I'm standing on the left side. So let's talk a little bit about coding for Kinect. I'll at first give an overview about what the APIs look and feel like, the core APIs, and maybe then let's start some Visual Studio and at least try it out. I won't try to do live coding here because that's a little bit too risky. But the core message is that you start with a Kinect sensor class, and that represents the actual device you're working with. Currently, even so, it says get default Kinect. The Kinect API and the whole stack only supports one sensor connected at the same time. The team is probably looking into providing support for more than one Kinect sensor connected through one box, but it's not there yet. The reason being, again, the USB bandwidth needed is really, really, really high. When you get the sensor, you are able to open it with an open command, and if you're done with it, you basically close it again. So this works in C Sharp and also in your own Windows Store apps if you watch them in JavaScript, in pretty much the same way of writing it. For fun of it, I also copy-pasted an example how it would look in C++. You have to do a little bit more things, basically, to get started. So when you got your sensor, and that's basically between opening and closing your sensor, you have a series of data sources you can choose to use in your applications. That's, for example, the audio source that I mentioned before when I was walking around and speaking and it kind of knew in which direction I was. It gives you very good high fidelity audio. You can even narrow down on somebody and filter that audio a little bit with it. But it's a relatively, in comparison, low-level API to give you an audio stream. If you want an MP3 out of it, you need to do that yourself, basically. Body frame source, is what we will look into that a little bit deeper. It's a representation of one of the bodies that Kinect can see. It can see up to 6 people with joints and gives you orientation of bones and so on. Body index, the next one, is related to body, giving you a pixel mask, basically a big array of byte values telling you, hey, it's 0, which corresponds to body 0, giving you an idea which body each pixel on the screen corresponds to. There's some funny artifacts with that. For example, if you're sitting on a chair, it might think that the chair belongs to your body. The reasoning being that it tries to find out for you what is in a way impacted by a body. On the other hand, if you would do sword fighting and have a sword in your hand and wave it around, it's maybe a use case that makes sense then. Color frame source is relatively trivial. It's just a color image that you get in each shot. It's a big byte array, and you can choose the color encoding format that it gives you. Like by default, I think it's YUV, but you can also say I want RBGA, and then the conversion is done for you, but that will be a little bit expensive in processing. Depth frame source provides an array of integers, unsigned integers, describing the distance of each pixel in that integer array to the sensor. Infrared frame source and long exposure infrared frame sources are two ways to get to the infrared data. It's just an intensity value. The difference between the two of them is that infrared frame source is a little bit more noisy, and long exposure infrared frame source is a little bit more smooth. Why they do that? I think they did it, from what I understand, for the Kinect Fitness games and for Xbox Fitness, where they have the heart rate functionality, and they try to look at the color and the infrared data to somehow approximate your heart rate information out of that, and they found out that it was too noisy if they use a regular infrared frame source. Finally, open multi-source frame reader is a way to connect to all of those data sources or a selection of those at the same time. You can choose to say, hey, I want, for example, body frame source and depth frame source always together at the same physical time in one call. Downside of it, you get it then when the slowest of all of them arrives. So you have to choose between synchronizing, getting different frame sources yourself, or using open multi-source frame reader to get all of them at once, but wait for the slowest of them. So readers, to those sources you get access to usually through a reader concept. It lets you do polling, like polling is still relevant for game developers often. They call this a game loop. Basically it means, hey Kinect, is there a new frame? Hey Kinect, is there a new frame? Or you can say, hey, I'm interested in getting an event fired when a new frame arrives. Finally, you can have multiple readers connected to a single source, and readers can also be paused. So this is an example of how it would look like if you open a reader and then you hook up an event handler with that reader. Here again, example for C# and for JavaScript. Frame references is what you get when you first get a frame before you actually access the data that the frame gives you. And think of it like giving you metadata. When an event fires, you receive metadata about the frame. The design principle is that you should work on that metadata and never use, for example, a hard-coded number of bodies that you think Kinect will give you, or number of pixels that exist in a given frame. So your apps are then safe to be, hopefully running without many changes for the next version that might come in a few years of Kinect for Windows. Then it gives you a relative timestamp that helps you to correlate between different frames that you get. It has a tick resolution, so it's pretty fine, and between an application start and application end, it is not supported officially, I believe, but you can actually use it to calculate like how much time really passed between different frames that you receive. So let's say you have your frame reference, then you say acquire frame, and then you get the access to the actual data that the frame provides. And when you're done with it, you want to clean up the frame that you were working with. Why that's important, I will try to show in Visual Studio. Basically, otherwise you would be blocking up resources in the shared memory, and you want to free those so that other apps can use it and actually connect. Protects you from doing something bad, so it won't give you new information unless you dispose it or close the reference to that frame. Again, like I've been saying that multiple times, you really want to minimize the time you hold on to a given frame. So if you want to do something complex, copy it, store it in your own memory, and be aware of that it might be a lot of memory you're dealing with. I mentioned the multi-source frame reader before, so again, it's an encapsulation of getting access to multiple frames once, and it will be the lowest frames per second of all of the frames you're interested in. In reality, that means it's either 30 frames typically or 15 frames per second, because the color frame source will, in low light conditions, fall back to 15 frames per second. Another base functionality that you get from the API is coordinate mapping. If you remember from the beginning, I mentioned that the camera, the color camera, has 1080p, so it has 1920 to 1080 pixels. But the infrared data and the depth data actually has 512 to 424 pixels. I don't know how they came up with those numbers, but there must be some chip design reasons why they did it this way. And this means that the aspect ratio is also a little bit different. So the infrared picture is more like approximately 4 by 3, I believe, and the other one is 16 by 9. And this API, that the coordinate mapping API, lets you basically get the corresponding coordinate in the other coordinate system. Say you have an infrared pixel and you want to get the corresponding position in the color field, then you use that API. And also, when you're dealing with body data, skeletal data, is given in a 3D space, you can also get the corresponding 3D coordinate that you would have in the depth space using this camera spaceport conversion. So let's look at a basic demo. Doing anything? Yep. So this demo is again just a visualization of depth, what you would see and how far something is away from the camera. It's you see that the people a little bit closer, a little bit darker, the people a little bit further away, a little bit lighter, and then it circles back to a darker color. And I will focus on setting up the frame reader. So what it does here, it gets the Kinect sensor. Let me zoom it in a little bit. Then opens the reader to it. And this reader, by the way, you can pause without throwing it away, with still keeping a reference to the sensor and to the reader. You can also say, hey, reader, pause for a second. Don't give me data, and continue later on. And then you hook up, can wire up an event handler with that reader. Now, where it gets more interesting is when you want to do acquire frame. So the regular thing that happens when you call it, well, you use using, for example, if you use .NET, C#, so it will do a dispose at the end for you. And you call that acquire frame at a specific point of time. I will show you something interesting, like when I put a breakpoint before this first acquire frame, then step over it, then try to acquire it, I will see that the depth frame is actually null. So this is something you have to be aware of. What it really means is Kinect tells you then this frame expired. I mentioned before every frame has a relative time. You get that in the frame reference. So when too much time passed between you getting the event call, the event thrown to you, and you saying acquire frame, Kinect will basically say, well, the relative time is not valid anymore. I should have a new frame for you. And so it won't give you that because it doesn't have the resources internally anymore to do that. But if you don't do that, if you call it fast enough, but in debugging, this will happen to you. Like if you step through it slowly, then you need to be careful where you put your breakpoint, otherwise you will get a null frame, and that's usually not very helpful. If I put my breakpoint after that, I will get the depth frame, and basically it again gives you access also to the to some metadata into it, but eventually you end up saying, hey, I want to use the buffer information of that, and doing some math with it, basically copy it to some information. What is relevant here is the depth, the range of that, of the depth information you get. And in this example, it's just copied to a different array that's then visualized. So that's not very exciting. Even so, it looks nice when you look at it. The other thing I wanted to show you briefly, what if we don't dispose it? But just say, hey, give me the frame, and we forgot to acquire it. You will see it's frozen, right? I mean, you get the first picture, and the next time the event handler would fire, or basically doesn't fire, because you haven't disposed the resources you blocked before. So be very careful always to dispose, otherwise you just don't get information. That protects you to build up, to put your memory full of trash, basically. Little demo that I wanted to show you in that context is the coordinate mapping demo. That gives you an idea what coordinate mapping that I mentioned before is actually good for. It's really, really, it's a cheap trick to basically give us a green screen scenario. If I walk in front of the camera now, he's already sitting someone, so we're now in the Grand Canyon or somewhere nearby. And you see that what it actually does is it gets the depth coordinates. It gets the body index internally, and then takes the color information that corresponds to the body index positions and just project that into a picture. You see a little artifact. If I move my hand to the left and the right, there's some imperfections here. This has two reasons. One is that it's probably a little bit dark here, so at least for the camera, that it might run, and the color information might run at 15 frames per second, but the body index information might run at 30 frames per second. The other thing that you notice is, I move my hand to the right. There are things in the color space that that don't exist in the infrared and depth space because of the aspect ratio. And on the side of my body or my hair and so on, this is a little bit tough even for the new tech to visualize. Again, those samples are all part of the Kinect for Windows SDK when you install it. You can really play around with them and modify them as you want. I wanted to show briefly the relevant part of the mapper. Yeah, so basically here would be the function call that is used to convert the depth information to the color information, working actually on a buffer. That's a little thing I didn't mention before. Usually when you get any type of data from Kinect for Windows, in reality it's a shared memory, and usually you want to just copy it into your own memory space, into your own byte array. You have, however, the option to just work on the underlying buffer through a pointer that you get through the API, and it really depends on how comfortable you are with doing that, and maybe still wanting to access it when it's not valid anymore, for example. So let me go back briefly to looking at what a body really is. So a body, and that's what we got in the body frame source, is a detected person and an abstraction of some information from that detected person. So you get up to 6 bodies currently that Kinect for Windows can detect in a room. If there's a 7th person walking in, it usually will ignore it. And you also get a tracking ID for each of those bodies, which is a unique number. Those are provided at 30 frames per second, and you get the hand state that I mentioned earlier when you have a lasso, a fist, or an open hand for two bodies that you have to choose, and something they call lean. Think of it like your human body is a joystick. You lean to the right side and tells you how much you lean to the right side and relatively. So some people build games based on that. Now, this is really how those joints would map to a real person or to a skeleton, or that at least is a design that they wanted to have. And it's relatively accurate, I have to say. I mean, I can show you a little bit of a gotcha I faced in one case when you work with it in real life. But you notice, for example, that you now have at the hand, you have 4 points that you can use, and you have the feet have 2 points, you have the head, and so on and so forth. But that's just a visualization of it. In the visualization, and I will show that in the demo again, it represents that you have different confidence levels for things that can be seen or cannot be seen very well for Kinect. But let's look really at what that class body looks like. It is a class, right? But let me tell you already now that pretty much everything that's in that class is eventually a struct, so a value type. So you want to be careful, and there's some examples how it's done, that you don't keep around that information for too long, because you get a lot of it every second and you might just overwhelm your heap. So it gives you, well, forget about the activities and appearance for a second. I don't know that we have that right now, but you get something where you where it gives you information if somebody's engaged with the camera, gives you information about the confidence level of the hands and left hand and right hand, and most importantly, at one point it gives you information how many joints. So you see that I cannot point in that PowerPoint, it seems, but. It gives you how many joints that body has, again, meta information. And then a dictionary of joint orientations and joint types, and joint positions, basically, and again, joint type. Let's look a little bit about what is a joint and what is a joint type. It has a comparer, and eventually, those are really structs. Structs are value types, right? It gives you a position and space for the joint. So for each joint, let's say the hand joint, you get 3D coordinates relative to the camera origin. So if you have enough time, you can look at how you would do something else with it. Often you have the case you want to have it relatively to the floor, but you don't get that out of the box right away from those joints. It's all relative to the camera looking at you. So zero would be basically a bullseye on your head. It also gives you for every joint a tracking state. A tracking state, think of it like a level of confidence, and it's not a grand, it's not a very, it's not a float or something. It's just like, hey, you're tracked, you inferred, or you're not tracked. Meaning, inferred would be, let's say I'm facing away from the camera and my right arm is occluded by my body, then Kinect for Windows in the API, because it has a knowledge of how body joints should be relative to each other, it can say, hey, I think this joint, the elbow should be there. I don't see it, but I'm pretty confident it's there. Then there's also not tracked, and it will still try to put a meaningful position to it, but the accuracy and the confidence you can use it in your own apps, especially if you want to do math on top of those joint positions, is relatively low. On the right side, you see joint orientation. This is a vector 4, which is called orientation, and you get a joint type with it, each of them. So for, let's say, for the hip, you have a joint orientation. For my head, you have a joint orientation. For my elbow, you have a joint orientation. And that is the relative rotation from the previous joint rotation. and from the first one from the camera. So think about this, like the camera is looking at you and then my my spine is pointing up, so you get some rotation in space pointing up. The representation of that is a quaternion. I'm not sure how much I should get into that. For those who have done game development or 3D development, that's like daily bread, basically. For the others, think of it like it's a very efficient way to represent a 3D rotation in space without some disadvantages of some other things, which is, for example, called gimbal lock. Some orientation representations have a property that you cannot express some relative rotations to each other. And also, this orientation, and I will go back to the Kinect evolution really quickly, really shows you not just the inner angle between two joints, but really tries to derive how a little bit accurately how joints are rotated to each other. Okay, so what is different about if you get a body structure that you want to handle in your own app? Again, you get a frame, and then you typically have a, you have a list of bodies in your app that you store somewhere. Now, you initialize that, and then at one point you tell the frame, hey, please get and refresh body data. And you pass in the list or the array of the bodies that you pre-allocated. The reason, again, this is a way of minimizing like heap congestion, like so that not too much information is kind of clogging up the heap. And you have two choices then. If you say, hey, I really don't want to overwrite my bodies every single time, but I want to store them somewhere else, then in that array or list of bodies you pass in, I think it supports the iList interface, you just zero or null out that position, and the Kinect for Windows API will give you a brand new, newly created body structure. So considerations for that, again, for bodies, is you should consider the tracking state of each joint. When you want to actually work with those positions, like joint positions or orientations, the format you get from Kinect for Windows is something you need to cast to something that you can process. For example, in the .NET world, pretty much all libraries work now with doubles. What you get here is a float type of position. For the DirectX folks, it's more common to just use the floats. If you want to apply math to it, if you are still in the WPF world, you get very nice libraries part of that in that namespace area where you can do orientations with quaternions and so on without installing anything else. If you're in the Windows Store world, unfortunately, there's no out-of-the-box 3D library yet, so you have to find something, and there's some third parties that provide .NET style libraries you can use then. Or you could even try to just decompile the stuff from WPF and put it in your own app. It's not that hard, so I would recommend to play around. If you really want to be fast, just use WPF to get started. And you really want to read up also about some of the math involved, especially when it comes to more advanced scenarios, when you don't want to just visualize a body, but say you want to know how fast is the body moving, are there forces involved, if you want to, calculate if it hurts if somebody falls down. And you might even want to consider to just utilize a gaming engine, for example, Unity, and plug in the body there. There's good support for that there, and then build your physics and math on top of that. As an example, what you can do with the body data, for example, on the left side would correspond to the joint positions. So you could calculate the velocity. You could calculate acceleration. If you have an idea how big or heavy your body is or your body joints are, you could calculate force and so on, power, work, and energy. And Now it gets a little bit more funky. You could also do the same thing with angular motions based on quaternions. And I went through this exercise for the right side, the angular motion. You will have a learning curve if you haven't done it before. But it could be worthwhile. Like, for example, flexing your muscles, like, and you want to know how much force you have at the elbow joint, you can get some approximation with the angular motion piece on the right side. Furthermore, when you get the body data, as joint position and as joint orientations, you might run into something that's called jitter. It would be, and it's very common in any computer vision algorithms that are implemented, that you have slight variances between different subsequent frames in a given body joint, for example. It will not make a big difference, let's say, if you just want to visualize it, but if you want to calculate acceleration between two joints, on a joint between different frames, you want to do some smoothing on top of that. In my case, I even did a multi-level filtering approach where in an app I developed where I filtered the position data, then the velocity and the acceleration. There's a good white paper available. The link is on the bottom. The slides are available for download, by the way, so you don't need to take pictures of that. That gives you an overview about all the different filters you could use for that. So let's still go back to the body quickly. So to give you an idea how it looks like to work with one of those, or what I was talking about with inferred or different tracking states. So when I go in front of the camera, well, there's somebody sitting there, which is, it's not bad, but will support multiple bodies. You see that right now, the camera sees everything of me, and everything is represented visually. I mean, that's in the sample codes, it's really simple, as solid green lines. And but if I turn to the side, like my right shoulder faces now the camera, my left shoulder is not visible to the camera anymore. It tries to get an idea where my joints could be. And you see, it's not entirely accurate always. Like, I'm standing pretty straight now, so it still makes sense for the left joint. But now, suddenly, it basically jerks around a bit. And you see that, in general, the whole jitter and how much things move around changes depending on how well it actually can see me. Then it could be that a joint is not tracked at all. So see, my hand is now outside the visual range, or it's not visible at all. So it still tries to get an idea where the joint is approximately, but it basically says, hey, I cannot track that. Another little gotcha I mentioned earlier, I stand relatively still and I just raise my arms, you see that my hip moves up. Yeah, my legs get longer. So if you ever want to do like joint segment approximation, you just want to measure a person's dimensions and approximate that, define the posture, the default posture they should have, and make them do that posture and then basically learn from that. I wanted to briefly show, since we talked about jitter, how jitter would really look like. I need to face the camera, move the camera away from the audience, because my app is not built that nicely yet that it supports multiple bodies. So what you see at the bottom, by the way, is a visualization of the floor plane. So you also get, with a body frame source, you also get an idea or an equation that tells you how far the floor basically is away from you. And there's some math you can use to then transform the coordinate spaces. So the sensor is actually pretty tilted, and you see that visually also that on the screen. And right now, if I'm standing straight, well, you see there's some jerking around with the lines, and those lines represent the green line would be velocity, the purple line acceleration. But if I remove the filtering that I implemented, you will see that the jerking around will be a lot worse. I'm standing very straight now, and you see a lot more moving around. So this would be the consequence if you don't filter between two frames and you want to do accurate math on the joint positions. Now, I probably won't be able to get into details into if those joint positions are really useful or accurate, but I talked about that in the previous talk I did this week, and we can follow up later on. But I actually did some energy expenditure estimation and validated that with another method, and you can get relatively accurate to do meaningful things or physics with those connect observations. Now, the next part I wanted to cover is interactions and speech. So right now, we talked more about the basic things you get out of the API, out of the SDK, and that Kinect for Windows service just surfaces to all the applications that want to use it. So one of the common things you want to do maybe in your app is not just like look at a body or present something, but you might want to interact with it with your hand. Be a little bit careful with that because there are a lot of design considerations for that, and I will not be able to cover all of them. The SDK provides a very simple mode of interacting with it. It first notices, hey, I'm engaged, I'm working with the sensor, I'm facing the sensor. Then it recognizes that a hand is raised and maybe wants to interact, so you can position it on a surface. Then it's able to detect that you're pressing, so meaning that you're pushing with your hand. And if you grab and then move around to the left or the right, or push and keep it grabbed and pan away, then it also does that for you. Now, how it does it, basically it plugs in between like a window, a frame, and a page, and will give you some viewers that you basically can plug in. You really don't need to do much to be able to define a clickable area, at least in the XAML and in the WPF world. There's also code available in the SDK for the C++ DirectX developers, but that's more involved and isn't just a library you build in, but you just need to do a few more things with that. Again, those are the libraries you can use to interact with those controls. And I will step over that relatively quickly. Basically, on the left side, you have the control you use in the WPF world. On the right side, you have in the store world, you have a base that is Kinect Toolkit input. And on top of that, either you have XAML controls or you have controls basic DX, which is more like code samples you can reuse or libraries you can reuse. Oh, okay, I opened the wrong sample. Sorry for the goof up. So I'm starting now the WPF-based sample that is out of the box, and it doesn't really have much custom code in there other than hooking up a few pictures and so on that are displayed. So, well, actually, I should turn the camera around so that I can see what I'm pointing at. Hello? Oh, there it is. So I close the hand, I pan to the left and the right, and it's pretty easy. I select with a little push, and I don't need to extend my hand very much, a zoomable photo. I can grab the photo and just zoom in by pulling it to me or zoom out by pushing it away. Yep. And this is really almost, I would say, no-code approach to do that, at least in the XAML world. Okay, basically you're just using the different UI elements or controls that you get from Kinect for Windows. Yep. So I don't want to waste too much time on this. I can just tell you it's really, really easy to do because otherwise I can't show you all the other things I wanted to cover still. In general, it's a WPF experience how to use a control. Speech is supported by the SDK by adding additional downloads, the Speech Platform SDK. I will not go too deep into that. Basically, you get from Kinect support for various languages, including different dialects. You have US English, I believe, and UK English, and so on. And in your own application, you define a little grammar then as an XML file and let Kinect then react to those XML files through the Speech Platform SDK, which again is a separate download. I just wanted to show briefly how that XML file would look like that you work with. Again, that's like it's like minimum code to use all of this, and it's a very, very easy to modify demo. Basically, it says this demo supports commands like forward, backwards, left, and right, including, oops, what happened? Yeah, sorry, apologies. So this grammar defined in the XML file supports different commands, forward, backward, left, and right. And what's interesting, you can define alternative commands for each of those words in the grammar. So if you would tell that little turtle now to turn right, straight, okay. Yeah. Voice recognition is a little bit tricky in larger rooms sometimes. Back. Turn left. Okay. Again, demo god. Maybe you can say something and listens to you, but again, if you download that, it's easy to try out and it usually works. Maybe it doesn't like me being German. I don't know. Okay. So as a developer, there's something that you will face when working with Kinect for Windows. It's it's pretty hard sometimes to code and at the same time do all those funky things in front of the camera. And you want to be able to have repeatable things you do. Like you want to be able to write an algorithm, do an interaction, and repeat it. For that purpose, you get in the SDK one tool that's called Kinect Studio that lets you record and play back all of those sensor streams that come from the Kinect. That means, however, that this is a lot of data. Again, the color stream is 120 megabytes per second. The depth stream, the infrared stream, 13 megabytes per second. And but the audio stream is harmless. The body frame, so the skeletal data and the body index are not recorded, but they're every time recalculated by the Kinect for Windows runtime. Reason being, I believe, from what I understood, is that they want to be able to improve the skeletal tracking over time, maybe with a better algorithm, and this way give you, well, the chance to still reuse your existing, your existing recordings. So Kinect Studio has been around before. Now it can also record audio, and you can play it back without a sensor attached. So if you record a lot of the recordings, on, let's say on a big USB drive, you give it to somebody else, they would be able to use that on their system without even owning Kinect for Windows. And there's actually a demo for that also in the. There's documentation for that. There's now a way to record or to control those playback and recordings through public APIs. So you can build your own intelligent algorithms or recordings around that. Let me show you how Kinect Studio looks like or what it does for you. So at first, it's not connected, right? I mean, it has, and then the first thing you want to do is you want to connect it to your physical Kinect device. And it gives you basically a monitor view, either in 2D or in 3D, which is pretty cool. You can actually rotate that around. And if I, let me turn it back to myself or to the podium so we have a little bit more detail to see. So I could try to change the angle and see, I can't see behind the podium, obviously, but the occlusions that you might care for that you can visualize with Kinect Studio, and that's what makes this rotation relevant. So it's not just cool looking, it's actually useful if you want to record a specific scene and make sure that you get everything that you want. So when I go to record, so it really just, well, records me doing this, so doing that, doing this. And then I stop, and then what I can do, I can basically play it back and, well, see me jumping around it again. And you see on the right side, there was the skeletal data based on the funny things I did. Now, what is interesting now, if I now start any of those SDK browser demo apps, so basically this recording now you can feed into all of the apps that you run. So you don't need to change your app, and you don't need to change your code, or it's not a debug mode in your app, to actually then use this stream. So let's say, let's do the body basics. Body basics is running. They just replay what I did. At one point, right now it recognizes the bodies there and exposes to the app that's running what it can detect. Now, this feature of Kinect Studio can actually be used for something which is a little bit bigger in a bigger picture, which would be machine learning for gesture recognition. So you can record a bunch of people doing gestures, then tag them in a gesture tool, basically, and then use a database from those gestures into a new own app for machine learning-based gesture recognition. This is one approach. You can also do a heuristic approach, a coding approach to build gestures and implement that. In some cases, the coding approach is actually more efficient. For example, for simple things like hand is above my head, it's maybe faster to just do a simple comparison between coordinates than to invest into recording a lot of streams, then tagging those streams, and so on and so forth. How that actually works in machine learning part might take a little bit too long. I can show, however, a small demo of it. So in this demo, what the demo does internally, it loads a gesture database, and in that gesture database there are several defined gestures. Now, come on. So it should see that there's some person standing there, and now for each of the detected bodies it will try to figure out if this gesture would be, in this case, seated as true or false. So if I go down a little bit, so for my body, the blue body, now it says it's true with a specific confidence. If I go up, it says it's false. Again, in your own application, you wouldn't use any code really to then implement the gesture, but you just use a very similar pattern like we used for getting the frame data for color frames or depth frames or body frames. And basically what you do, for each of the bodies, you open a reader and you hook it up with an event handler. You load the gestures from a database and add the relevant gestures to your detector, and then just react when that event handler fires. If that, for example, that this gesture has a name you're looking for, right? I mean, there's nothing dealing with coordinates or anything like that in your own code. Again, to demo that in detail, how to build those gestures takes a little bit too long. I tried to demo it in my talk on Wednesday, which was more a general audience, not developers. So something went wrong there, but the process is still demonstrated there. So again, besides of building the gestures or the posture recognition through machine learning, you can use heuristic approaches. This would be an example, like if you want to find out if somebody is standing or sitting, maybe you just need to look at the angles between the floor and the spine and the legs and use those things. So just as an alternative to the machine learning approach. Now, okay, what it uses internally, it uses two different types of gestures that it can support. Discrete gestures like you're sitting or you're standing or your hands are to the side. But you can also train it to recognize, for example, a golf swing. And in those cases, if you do that in code, it's really, really, really hard because you suddenly deal with, okay, part of my hand is occluded while I'm moving, or I'm not sure what parts of the body are relevant. So this machine learning approach can really help you doing that without much code. For those more continuous gestures, the swings, the baseball swings and so on, you would get information how much you successfully completed the gesture. What is really great about that, I mean, and that you get some machine learning innovations really for free with the SDK. Again, the SDK doesn't have a licensing fee for it. You just buy the Kinect for Windows, use it, and write your apps, and as long as your operating system and everything else, your development tools are nicely licensed, you can just start like spitting out those applications for it. So this is just describing the process how the gesture builder would work. Like you record examples, you tag those gestures. Let's say, hey, this person is sitting, or this, or ignore where they're not sitting. Then do an analysis of that. You preview that with a little tool that gives you a confidence value graphically. You rinse and repeat, and in your own app, you just call the gesture builder database basically and get the results. The cool thing is you can just replace the database with a more granular database if you have more test subjects, for example, over time. So I jumped ahead and did the demo before. So let's go to the next part of the talk, which is Kinect Fusion and Kinect and Face. So those parts of the SDK have one big downside. They cost a lot of processing power. I can tell you that right away. So Kinect Fusion, think of it as an engine that helps you to scan things in 3D space and to give you a 3D reconstruction of those objects. The sample code in there is really boring to show because it only gives you access to wrapped calls to hardcore efficient implementations that actually run on the GPU. So Kinect Fusion uses your GPU heavily, so your graphics processing unit, your graphics card will be very busy. If you have an older graphics card, you will not get many frames per second running that. And there are a lot of things you can do with the data. The standard way would be just scan a scene and then try to export it as a mesh into something else, clean it up. Actually, in the Windows Store, there's now an app 3D builder that actually is where you can even 3D print objects that you scanned. Yeah, I mean, I think there's no source code yet available. I don't know if they will make it available, but they have sample objects, but also let you scan it with Kinect for Windows. Kinect Face is a 2D way of detecting people's faces. Again, not recognizing. It gives you basically the dimensions of the face, gives you the direction the face is headed, detects the center of the eye, the mouth, and the nose, and gives you some additional information like is that person maybe happy, is the mouth open, or the mouth moving, or not. So this is basically a DLL that we would just link in your .NET code and call it, and in a similar way like the body readers, you would get face information for each body you hook it up with. HD Face, again, is a very advanced and high performance API that helps you to reconstruct, or basically, you know, to transform a stereotypical face, 3D face of a person, into something that looks more than the face of someone you observe. The detailed code is not exposed to you. You basically call this and say, hey, start recording, and it tells you, hey, I need more views with the face facing up, or more views with the face facing left, or the face facing right. Let's look at that briefly in a demo. I will start with the face basics, and I hope it can see me. So right now, oops, I should switch to the right box. Yep. So it sees that I'm looking at the camera. Right now, I don't have an overlay over my actual body. But I'm opening my mouth. So mouth open, mouth closed. So it should recognize that my eyes are closing or open. Well, I cannot see it then if it's right. But if I'm smiling, then it's also able to detect that. It takes some processing power to do that. So the other day, I actually accidentally unplugged the power of my notebook. It went into power saving mode and started choking up a little bit. So Face Basics is really hard. 3D Face or HD Face is really hard to demo because it takes sometimes a while to calibrate it right. So it sees my face now and tells me basically that it needs more views, like left view, right view, up view, down view. But over time, the face will be transformed more into something that looks a little bit more like me. So if you have a beard, maybe the results might vary. So your mileage might vary. But again, to demo that properly, we really need some time and you want to have a little bit calibrated environment. They're using that in the Kinect sports game, for example. So finally, when I'm wrapping up this talk, I wanted to briefly show Kinect Fusion, what that means. So basically, this is me standing behind the camera, right? And if I lift now the Kinect sensor up, it will try to reconstruct what it sees, right? I mean, I move it around, and I moved it around too much, so the pixels start appearing now over time, and it gets more and more detail of what is going on my desk, like you see some outline of the keyboard and so on. So the more I do it and the more I move it around, the more information it gets about the scene, and you can adjust the granularity of that scene in a lot of detail. But it's very, very expensive to do in terms of processing power. There's third-party support. You can use it also with C-style applications, creative coding environments through an open-source C library. You can use it with the Unity engine that is supported by Microsoft. I showed before this little example, this little demo that I implemented where I demonstrated jitter and so on and so forth. You can actually do meaningful things with Kinect for Windows. There's a call to action. Download the SDK, start playing around with it. Like if you don't have it yourself, ask a friend for some recordings with Kinect Studio maybe, or just buy the adapter to use your Xbox One SDK. For announcements, follow that Kinect for Windows blog and website. I recommend to try to do a hackathon maybe in your user groups or so on and get creative ideas. And sign up for the free developer program that when you download the SDK, I mean, they don't give you anything really for free, but you get access to the product team through emails and so on, I mean, through the forums. So this is my contact information. It's also on the slide deck, and you don't need to take a picture of it. If you want to reach out, best is email. I will do my best to get back to you. Don't let the Microsoft address confuse you. I don't work for them, just as a disclaimer again. But it's a good way to reach me. I have a little blog, and there are a few other talks you might be interested in. One is combining Kinect with other applications right now and starting at 10:15. There's some more additional resources for Kinect for Windows, and finally the track resources that exist for the whole Windows track. So please submit your evals. We don't have time for public questions, but I will stick around and make sure I will answer all the questions you might have or follow up with you guys. And I'm glad that you took the time on a Friday morning to be with me. Thank you.